It's Friday, June 3rd, 2005. Colleagues, this is, as you know, the last day that this committee is scheduled to meet, and we are shutting down after today. So we have...
Got along without you before I met you again.
There you go. We have a little bit of an agenda to get through. Colleagues, we're going to sort of plod through this agenda because this is a cleanup agenda. And we have to do some cleanup as we sort of plot our way through. The first thing I would like to do is send some bills over to committees where they were requested for further consideration as this committee closes. So I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1, Senate House Bill 2010, House Bill 3444, House Bill 2009. These bills are going to be sent in block to the State and Federal Affairs Committee for further consideration. So I'd like a motion to send them in block.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 1, House Bill 2010, House Bill 3444, and House Bill 2009 be moved in block or be moved to the committee on the House Committee on State and Federal Affairs.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler moves Senate Bill 1, House Bill 2010, House Bill 3444, and House Bill 2009 en bloc without recommendation to the Committee on State and Federal Affairs. Is there discussion on this motion?
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes,
I'm wondering why they're sent, why we're not going to vote on them in this committee and send them to the floor, why they're going to be sent to another committee.
They were requested to go to State and Federal Affairs, which is anticipated to open shortly. This committee is being closed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other discussion or questions? Are there any objections?
I object, Mr. Chair. I think that we should be dealing with this any before, so I will be voting no.
Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Excused.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Greenwood.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Butler.
Butler votes aye.
Chair votes aye. The bills are ordered, moved, and blocked to the Committee on State and Federal Affairs. We will close the work session on those four measures. We'll open a... stand at ease. Next step on our agenda is to refer... Senate Bill 329 and House Bill 3086 to the Committee on Budget. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 329, open a work session on House Bill 3086. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 329 and House Bill 3086 be moved to the Committee on Budget, the House Committee on Budget, without recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler moves Senate Bill 329 and House Bill 3086 en bloc to the Committee on Budget without recommendation. Representative Greenlee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I will go along with this recommendation. I want to keep those bills moving, but we heard sufficient testimony, it seems to me, unless I dreamed it, it's been late one night, to I think allow us to pass that with a recommendation, and I'm really sorry it's going forward without recommendation. It seemed to me there may be budget considerations, and we do want to clear those, and I hope the Committee on Budget will work this bill, but I would very much have preferred to send it along with a due pass recommendation.
Is there further discussion?
I concur with Representative Greenlee, and it's a great disappointment to me that we're not passing it to the floor with the due pass recommendation, even to the Budget Committee with the due pass recommendation.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Excuse.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Butler.
Butler votes aye.
Chair Delta.
Chair votes aye. The motion to send Senate Bill 329 and House Bill 3086 to the House Committee on Budget has passed. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 329, close the work session on House Bill 3086, and recognize Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, it's an unusual occasion that I have constituents that will make the travel across the mountains all the way from Eastern Oregon, and so it gives me a great deal of pleasure today to introduce to the members of the committee and the audience that's assembled to two of our constituents from House District 60 in Southeastern Oregon, Barbara Sand from the Tribal Council Chair of the Burns Paiute is standing here by the handsome Judge Steve Grassley, our county judge from Harney County, and just wanted to welcome them all the way across from Burns and Harney County. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I want to welcome you, too. Representative Butler alerted me to your presence, and I thought, you know what, somebody who's made such a far journey would like to say hello. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1040. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 1040 requires insurers offering health insurance to report annually to the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs any payment information relating to diagnostic-related groups and procedures. It also directs the director to make that information reported available to the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research. This does have a fiscal impact. It has a subsequent referral to the budget. You should have attached to your staff member summary the A4 amendments. The A4 amendments directs the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs and allows them the authority to provide the identification information just to the Office of Health Policy, protecting the confidentiality issue of data for other purposes.
Okay. Scott Gallant, please.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. Thank you for saving me from the chaos of the hall. It's much more quiet here. The OMA supports the Dash 4 amendments. They essentially do two things, which I addressed to the committee when you had a public hearing. First of all, it says that you will not disclose identifiable information for an individual patient or a physician podiatric physician. And then secondly, in order to protect the underlying data that has individualized information, we accept this information from the public records law. Those were the two issues that I raised before. The Department of DCBS supports this amendment, as does Bruce Goldberg and his shop, and OMA, and I know of no opposition. I would encourage your support for this amendment.
Questions or comments? See none, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Greenlee?
Yeah, well, I did want to comment before I move these amendments, sir, if you would let me do that. As opposed to Representative Butler, who was pleased to see his constituents, I have to put up with Bruce Goldberg all the time. I just want to note that. But having done that, I would like to move the A2 amendments. The A4 amendments.
Thank you, Representative.
I have them in front of me. The A4 amendments to Senate Bill 1040, please.
All right. Thank you, Representative Greenlee. Representative Greenlee moves the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 1040. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the A4 amendments are ordered adopted. Representative Greenlee, may I have a motion, please, to send the measure as amended without recommendation to the Committee on Budget, please?
Yeah, is there still a fiscal impact on this?
There was a request to consider the impact in the the fiscal impact or potential fiscal impact in the context of the Department of Human Services budget. So,
Okay.
Excuse me, the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget.
All right. I move Senate Bill 1040 to the House Committee on Budget without recommendation. Although I will personally send along my strong do-pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Greenlee. Representative Greenlee moves Senate Bill 1040 as amended without recommendation to the House Special Committee on Budget. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, I guess echoing what Representative Greenlee, the question that he asked, why it's going to budget. If there were fiscal, wouldn't it have been identified on the Senate side?
It does have a fiscal impact statement. It should
be. Where is, I don't seem to have that.
Is it not in your bill file?
There it is. It's on the map.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, why would we not be sending it with a due pass recommendation?
Well, I didn't make the motion, Representative Tomei.
No. Well, I was asked to make it without.
Could I amend the motion with to make it a due pass recommendation?
Representative Tomei, you can do whatever you want.
I ask to amend the motion to pass it to the Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves that we amend Representative Greenlich's motion and that be replaced with a motion to send Senate Bill 1040 as amended to the Committee on Budget with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there objections to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. And do we just send it, or is that it? Well, we'll
order on the floor.
We will order.
Send it with a due pass.
We will order Senate Bill 1040 as amended, with a due pass recommendation to the House Special Committee on Budget. So ordered. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 1040.
No, it's going to be.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do the
reconsideration. Yeah. I would really like to do that. 329.
Okay. We're
going to
go to 598.
Yeah, but
all these bills, the state and fed, remove these three bills, the budget, and then we're coming back. Then we'll not be able to reconsider. If you want, but they're really just moved okay. Bills. We haven't voted.
Okay.
Yeah, we're kind of still in the middle there. Okay. Do we have a script? Okay, next we will open the possible reconsideration work session on Senate Bill 598A. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and reconsideration of Senate Bill 598A be taken up immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 598A do pass be reconsidered. Is there objection? Hearing none. So ordered.
Okay.
Colleagues, just to bring you up to speed on Senate Bill 598, we want to do a little bit more work with 598 and do a little bit more work before we send it to the floor for final consideration. So we are going to hang on to 598 before it heads over to the House floor.
Mr. Chair, then you will ask the Speaker for another committee meeting for this?
I will ask the Speaker for another committee meeting, whether we'll be allowed to take it up in this committee or whether we'll have to send it over to another committee will be decided by the Speaker.
Mr. Chair, can I make a statement on the record on this? I think one of the problems with 329 as opposed to last year with Senate Bill 875 is the pharmaceutical industry in the form of pharma representatives have been really unwilling to enter into any negotiations whatsoever. They've been saying from the beginning that it's not necessary that what's covered in Senate Bill 598 does what needs to be done for our patients and have been and that's been the end of the discussion. I'm not sure what's. They were obviously much more willing to be socially responsible in the last session than they are in this session. My recommendation with 598, if it's considered, is that it be sent over to the Committee on Budget with 329 and that a work group be put in place work 329 and 598 into the same bill and try and see if we can achieve some kind of compromise that allows us to move this step forward. And consequently, I will move Senate Bill 598 to the Committee on Budget for the purpose of seeing how it can be integrated with Senate Bill 329.
Committee will stand at ease.
After further consideration, I withdraw that motion.
Thank you, Representative Greenlake. Representative Greenlake withdraws the motion. Seeing no other discussion, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 598A. Committee will stand at ease. 13A. It's a good bill that's ready to go to the floor. There was an amendment that was proposed after basically we took possession of the amendment after we had considered the measure and sent it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We wanted to try to see if we could get that amendment to work. I think that's the dash 5 amendment that you have in your packets for today, but the dash 5 have a fiscal impact that will mortally wound this bill. We do not want to do that, so we will not adopt the dash 5s, and this bill will continue on its merry way to the House floor and become law with any luck.
Without amendment.
Without amendment. Without yeah. Further amendment.
But we do have one amendment, do we?
We have the A5s right now. We did amend the. I think we amended.
Yeah, we
amended the bill on Friday, on Monday. No, last Friday.
With the 2s and the 3s.
With the 2s and the 3s to make that bill better.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. What happened to 4?
Okay. I'll do my best.
Do we, are there 4s?
Do you think there's those?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had a bit of a staffing issue this morning in preparation for a meeting. Protocol is that when you adopt two amendments, they get combined. The A4 is the 2s and the 3s. They should not be in your packet because they are the combined amendments that the committee already moved.
Thank you. Okay. Committee will stand at ease and think about Senate Bill 782. Order on the Health and Human Services Committee, and we will continue, Representative Greenlick. Representative Greenlick, we will continue to meditate on Senate Bill 782 for a little while longer. With that, we will open chanting and candles and whatnot. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 947. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As you recall, we had a public hearing on Senate Bill 947 on May 23rd. This requires the Department of Human Services to make records concerning reports of child abuse available to any person if the child dies or suffers serious physical injury. It also allows the department to exempt specified information from disclosure, and it allows DHS, if it does not have the report or record, to disclose that information. At this time, Mr. Chair, there's no fiscal or revenue impact, and I have no amendments. Just to highlight to the members, I believe you have written testimony from legislative advocates Tom Gallagher that provides additional information about public records inspection that the committee discussed on the 23rd. I hope you have that and have had a chance to look at that.
We're into voting on these 4 work sessions.
Yeah, we're just about
to. We're going to be last night after the previous 947, so we can take 2 minutes and then we can come back to 20 for the hour.
Okay. Okay. This bill is, colleagues, this bill 947 is ready to go. We have tried to have a mini work group to try to get at some concerns that come up, but I think that we're going to have to move this bill forward as it is to shed light on how the Department of Human Services operates their child welfare program. So I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I move Senate Bill 947A to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson moves Senate Bill 947A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tomei, take your time.
Question.
Yeah.
Their place to send consent.
Probably not.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that the only opposition was from Supplemental Rights Project, is that correct? And that was
yes.
Written opposition, no other opposition since there wasn't at the meeting?
No.
Is that correct? Okay, thank you very much.
Right. Representative Tomei, I spent some time with JRP and some of their advocates trying to see if we could do something with this bill that would allay some of their concerns, and we were not able to come to an agreement, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Having said that, is there further discussion on the motion?
I also raised some issues at the time of the meeting that concerned me, but I think I'm satisfied that there's proper safeguards in place now.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Greenland.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 947A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Anderson, I don't think this is a candidate for the consent calendar, so I will entertain. Would somebody like to carry this bill? Representative Anderson is asked to carry the bill. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 947 and open the work session on Senate Bill 880A. We'll be a few minutes on. Sandy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as you recall, we had a public hearing on this bill on May 27th. This bill does numerous changes on clarification of the scope of practice for nurse practitioners. As you recall, Martin Taylor came up and gave you an analysis of the bill. We do have, to my knowledge, at this point, three amendments. I'm hoping that you have them. At the time of the public hearing, we had the dash A6, which deleted the language on page 17, authorizing the Board of Nursing to adopt rules for nurse practitioners' prescriptive authority. The A-A6 removes that language, and the dash A7s and A8s came to us moments before. I believe we'll need a walkthrough on that, sir.
Okay. Martin Taylor, please.
Chair Deltano, members of the committee, thank you very much for your time, and particularly thank you, Chair, for putting together a work group with the Oregon Medical Association, ourselves, and yourself to come up with these amendments. I call this my Mr. Potato Head bill because there's lots of parts that keep falling off, but, you know, still good. There's still lots of important parts left. If you like, I'll just walk quickly through what the amendments do, and I've tried to provide you a sheet that will make that a little bit easier to understand. And if I go too slowly, let me know. If I go too quickly, let me know. Ask questions. The following sections of the bill we agreed in our work group to delete. Section 1 were the mental health holds that nurse practitioners...
Martin, can I ask you to hang on for maybe just 1 second, please?
Sure. And I think we just as a statement, the dash 6 amendments got discussed at the last hearing. We support putting those in. I think we're working off of dash 8s. Dash 8s reflects some final agreements between ONA and OMA. But there were some language we left the work group we still needed to work on. So I'm walking through the dash 8s for you. Section 1 is being removed. That's the mental health holds. Section 2 for the issuing of health certificates. This section came out of the bill because those health certificates were, in any circumstances, where a nurse practitioner may be needing a health certificate to return somebody to work or to school. But you'll notice that later we added a section to just address allowing children to return to school. Section 3 dealt with quarantines. That's something that only a physician can order. We agree to take that out for his practitioners. Section 11 is coming out of the bill. That was
Mark, hang on.
Yep.
On the health certificates,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You and I had discussed keeping the health certificates for nurse practitioners in school settings, but that's in the A8?
That is in the A8. It's in the front of the first page, and it's just you're really just adding the word nurse practitioner to a sentence that also has school nurses and public health nurses. The problem here is that in many of our schools, we don't have school nurses at all, and in many of our more rural counties, you don't have county health nurses that can go visit a school easily. So if you're in a small community, a Keno or a Klatskanine or a Gold Hill, it may be the only place that you're going to be able to easily access a primary care provider to get your kid with head lice back in school when the head lice are gone is a nurse practitioner that doesn't work for the school district.
We actually visited one of those clinics in Baker.
Yeah.
City where there was a nurse practitioner. Right. That was basically working as a school nurse. Yeah.
North Powder, actually.
North Powder.
That's right.
That's right. That's not an unusual thing at all, unfortunately, but that's a bill for another day.
Okay.
Section 11 was the referring of hearing aids. Hearing aid specialists have a statute that says they have to refer patients on to specialists, and when specialists aren't available, physicians. This was going to allow them to do physicians and nurse practitioners. Would have been helpful in rural areas, but wasn't as important as some other parts of the bill. It came out. Section 15 dealt with how to restore probationary driver's licenses. This is where someone's lost their driving privileges for medical reasons. We thought a nurse practitioner should be able to clear someone to drive again. OMA disagreed. We discussed it and took that out of the bill entirely. And there have been three sections that have been amended. Of those three, Section 7 has produced a little bit of last-minute discussion. We had our discussions and drafted these amendments at the beginning of this week, from Tuesday. I was unfortunately unable to be here yesterday because I wasn't feeling well. Everybody agreed that they would go back and check what we agreed to with their membership. And when OMA did so, they had some questions come up around the description of Section 7. We are in general agreement with OMA about these amendments, but there is now some additional discussion on this topic that this committee may be asked to clarify. What we've passed out is the form that we would like nurse practitioners to be able to sign that would allow a patient 30 days prior to receiving a procedure to be notified. Yeah.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Martin, I have a couple questions on Section 8 and also Section 13. Section 8 in Sub 5 talks about emergency dental health written policies, that the nurse practitioner is being added there for dental plans and dental record systems. Mm-hmm. What could you familiarize me with the dental training that a nurse practitioner has had?
First thing you should acknowledge is in corrections health, most of your primary care providers now are nurse practitioners and not physicians. It's just not a horribly desirable practice setting for most physicians. And in terms of experience in the dental care in particular, I might actually, if you don't mind, bring one of the two nurses I have behind me to talk to you about their training.
Sure. Thank you.
Either.
Let me follow the question right, so that they can answer at both the same time.
Right.
In Section 13, it talks about the nurse practitioner essentially verifying that a person's oral cavity is substantially free from disease and mechanically sufficient to receive a denture.
Right.
I'd like to know what oral pathology and oral pathology is covered in nursing training.
Well, you are now addressing the expert, so I'll be sure to let them know who you are.
I actually am a women's health practitioner and did not receive training in women's health. However, if a nurse practitioner were a family nurse practitioner or an adult nurse practitioner, she would have had a training in examining the oral cavity. And this would be a fairly general examination for lesions and unresolved dental extractions that hadn't healed, leftover teeth, various kinds of oral lesions, that kind of thing.
Right. Follow up. That's the area that I'd be most concerned about, same as with a denturist, that you not want to be covering up an oral lesion, and some can be very difficult to diagnose. But I don't have any major problems with the bill, but I just want to be a little careful that we don't overstep and have someone who isn't trained making that diagnosis for placing a denture.
Chair Delta, Representative Anderson, we absolutely understand that concern, and I think as with any physician who got a patient that may have a piece of care that was beyond their area of expertise, they would refer them to another physician. Nurse practitioners would do likewise if they had a patient come in that either had a condition that was outside their area of expertise or a degree of care that was needed in that area beyond their expertise, they would refer to an appropriate dentist, physician, someone who had the expertise.
If they saw it.
Yeah. To return to the description. We were at this section of the bill, Section 7, that deals with procedure of sterilization. And you have a form in front of you that is used when a woman seeing her primary care provider, which in some cases will be a nurse practitioner or a nurse midwife, says that they're interested in receiving sterilization and as a procedure. The first part of the form, you'll notice, talks about the consent that's necessary to be given at least 30 days and not more than 180 days before the procedure. And as you go through the form, you see at the very end that there's another place where the consent has to be signed by the physician who's actually performing the sterilization. Nurse practitioners do not perform sterilizations. However, it is more convenient for the patient to be able to give that 30 days notice consent at the time that they're working with their nurse practitioner. So frequently this might be a situation where a pregnancy is involved and they want to have their tubes tied at the end of delivery, which is a convenient time to do that. Makes more sense to be able to do that with your nurse practitioner. So that was our goal. I don't want to represent OMA's concerns, but they brought concerns to us yesterday, and it may be appropriate at this time to hear those concerns and then have the committee resolve whether it stays in the bill or not.
Well, let me ask you a question, Martin, on this form. So the way I understand it, the nurse practitioner cannot provide the procedure known as sterilization.
That's right.
It has to be done by a physician.
That's right.
So I guess the question was the duplication of the consent to sterilization because it was suggested to me that no physician would prepare to do the sterilization procedure without they themselves getting the consent to sterilization completed. And so they may not accept and or likely would not accept the consent to sterilization form completed by the nurse practitioner. So it seems like a duplication.
Right. Just, I think there's a little confusion even between OMA and ONA on how this form operates. This form is for the purpose of getting federal dollars to fund the procedure, whether that's Medicare, Medicaid, VA, whatever. You have to have this form completed. So this begins the reimbursement process for the procedure. A physician very well may say, I'm not comfortable performing a procedure without having talked to my patient first and consenting them. The nurse practitioner who is first hearing the request for sterilization would complete the form and set in motion the ability to pay for that procedure, and then would refer that patient to the physician who would perform the procedure, and it would become that physician's decision whether they want to do a 30-day consent, whether they want to do consent at the time. But legally, our understanding is they simply need to be doing the consent at the time of the procedure. the law is intended to protect women from being in a situation where they're feeling forced to be sterilized by whatever other arrangements, by a spouse, by a strange episode or situation in their life, and so they're given this 30-day window of time. And that's what you're essentially doing in that first visit is not something that is as medically necessary as it's advisable from a psychological standpoint to give someone at least a 30-day period of time to consider a procedure that is going to be a big impact in their life and a permanent impact in their life, and to make sure that they really intend to do that.
And they have that already.
If you're not receiving federal monies, you already have that. If you're receiving federal dollars for the procedure, you only have that procedure paid for if this form is completed, and the first contact with this form is very frequently, particularly for lower income women who are often the ones receiving federal assistance for the procedure, a nurse practitioner.
Questions or comments? All right, let's hear from the OMA on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. We have been trying to work out how this would operate legally and appropriately. Fundamentally, this form provides, the patient provides consent to the physician, the person who is going to perform the procedure, the consent to do so. If a physician does not get consent from the patient, then he or she is committing a battery. And I would suggest to the committee that having a nurse practitioner who, and this not to be derogatory, it's just that they don't perform the procedure. If the physician, if a nurse practitioner gets the consent from the patient to do this, and then a physician does not get consent, in other words, get this form signed, do the typical informed consent that you have to perform as a physician for any surgical procedure, then you would be exposed to a major liability suit. So my point is that you could, this part of this amendment would suggest that a nurse practitioner can get consent. It has no meaning in the sense of having the actual surgeon receiving consent, so they would have to ask the patient again to sign the form to permit the procedure, and then he or she would also fill out on the back of this form the physician's statement. So you have two distinct things going on here. You have to have the patient, and the physician has to receive consent from the patient to perform the procedure, which is consent, and then the physician has to sign this bottom portion, which is the physician's statement saying, yes, in fact, I did get the consent as signed here. So I think it's, going to be problematic from a legal perspective. And secondly, I think it's going to be exceedingly confusing for the patient who, or the patient's representative, who will have said, well, I signed the consent form, but it has no legal effect, at least from the physician's perspective. So they would have to do this again. Now, I checked with OMAP, and they indicated that from their perspective, it would be the physician's obligation to get this consent, as this form is outlined, twice, because you absolutely have to have that consent. We have some, I think, legal and practice problems with this approach.
Representative Tomei?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, I can imagine a situation where a woman is in a rural area, there's no physician around, the hospital where the baby is going to be delivered is a ways away. She's seeing a nurse practitioner. She has told the nurse practitioner she would like to have sterilization. Mm-hmm. And so she's signed the form. It's got to be more than 72 hours, but less than 30 days, correct? So she knows she's going to go deliver her baby Wednesday morning at 8 in the morning, let's say. And she has signed this with her nurse practitioner, say, on Monday. I don't know, 78, that's 48 hours, but Friday, say, before. So she knows she's not going to be seeing the physician until delivery, right? So wouldn't that make sense? I mean, if the physician were going to perform the physician needs to do this, that the physician is not going to be seeing her until delivery, and then it's too late for that 72-hour window, right?
You know, and I really understand the concern. As you'll notice on the form, when on the patient statement, there has to be already in, I assume, in process, an identification of the physician that they plan on seeing,
right.
And you'll see that on the
right.
front end. An ideal process, I'm assuming that there's already been an arrangement by the nurse practitioner who has, you know, gone through some of this
right.
discussion. So the physician would still be, I assume they would have an arrangement to enable the physician to get the proper consent from the patient.
But the physician will not have seen the patient until delivery.
I understand the difficulty, but as I understand the law and as I'm being advised by our counsel, the physician would have, you know, there are just not any exceptions to getting consent prior to the surgery by the surgeon. And, you know, I just can't figure, I have not yet been able to figure out how we can make this work without having it done twice, and it may very well cause time difficulties, but I don't think the way this is proposed, it addresses those problems.
Mr. Chair, can I try?
President Brannon?
Scott, there are two different issues we're talking about mm-hmm. here, right? One issue is the question of surgical consent. That's the general question, the battery issue and all that. That's one piece. The other piece is having a form signed
to start
prior to 30 days before the time problem. My assumption is you have no problem with having the nurse practitioner deal with the 30-day form, get the 30 days out of the way, and then it would be clear. I don't think anybody would have any problem that somewhere before anesthesia, the patient would need to be consented for the surgical procedure. I'm not sure we have a problem. I think what we're talking about here is this 30-day form to make sure the federal funding piece gets in place and trying to get this done under circumstances where there's essentially not a physician around. That obviously won't obviate in any way. We need to have that on the record. It doesn't obviate the need for the physician.
Correct.
For whoever is
correct.
Performing.
And we don't believe, at least as this is amended currently in the Dash Aches, that we've sufficiently dealt with that. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenland, I agree. I mean, we don't have a problem with getting the beginning of the process started, with the patient. But again, the only person who can give consent to the surgeon and the person who has to get the consent from the patient is the surgeon. So this amendment, while I know it's well intended and I appreciate where they're trying to go, this doesn't solve that dilemma.
I'm not sure I understand what the dilemma is.
Well, as it was described...
Yes, the answer is there needs to be a second consent before the procedure. Right?
Yeah. Chair Velta, Representative Greenlick, again, for the record, it's Martin Taylor. I think actually just reading the piece of the amendment makes it pretty clear. It says that that nurse practitioners can only do this the 30 days in advance. And I think the amendment also makes it very clear that the final consent has to be done by the physician performing the procedure. So I think we've taken great care to avoid the concern that Scott is raising, although I know Scott just really got this analysis from his legal counsel yesterday, so I appreciate the fact that this is in no way bad faith on his part bringing the issue up. It's just we have to figure this out, and we haven't had a lot of time to do it. And I appreciate you as a committee helping us do it collectively. He only got this amendment right before the committee hearing started, like the rest of us. So I think just taking it and reading that piece of the amendment, though, really clarifies that we've reached that intent.
Mr. Chair.
Person Bullard.
I have a question for Scott. Thank you. Scott, is part of your concern the fact that if there is some concern, I've now had a chance to look at the interpretation section and some of the other portions. This is a very complex form, obviously. A person doesn't go out and get sterilized without, you know, plenty of consideration beforehand. Is some of your concern the fact that if there is alleged battery at a later time against the doctor, that battery then, that you've got an accessory to the battery?
That would be a possibility. I could imagine that occurring. Again, it's just incredibly important that, one, we don't confuse the patient on whether or not they've gone through the appropriate steps, and I don't think anyone's trying to do that. And secondly, I don't want to put a physician in a position where he or she may have thought that the consent had been, you know, the law had been changed, consent was okay, when in fact they still have to get the consent from the patient themselves. Otherwise, they violated the statute. And that's what really concerns me.
Thanks. Yes. See the look on my face. Scott, I guess I'm still somewhat confused. So your point is that it isn't sufficient that a nurse practitioner or another healthcare professional get this permission somewhere in that window between 30 days and 72 hours before the sterilization is to be performed. It must be given to the physician directly. Is that your point?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
And you, according to your belief, that's in law, that's in statute. Oregon law?
Oregon law.
Thank you.
Martin, does this still have an emergency clause on it?
I don't have it in front of me. I don't believe it does. We typically don't do that.
Either, which means that it would take effect on what, 1st January 2008?
Yeah.
That comes back in 2009?
2006.
I agreed with you too. Isn't that terrible?
Actually, I have a bill like that.
You do, don't you?
But we can't get in this committee.
Right. 2006, and the next assembly meets 2007, so you have 1 year if there's a problem to sort of figure this out. Scott, can you look with this sterilization form, and if there's a problem, can we bring it back next session and fix it?
Mr. Chairman, I of course will take the advice of the committee and try to move forward. We'll work with the ONA through the rulemaking process, obviously, to try to make sure that there's not any confusion from that particular section, and see if we can't do it that way. But if we do identify any problems, I can assure you that we will be back, hopefully, to fix it.
And I think it's important, Mr. Chair, for us to put on the record that there's certainly nothing in the intent here that takes away the responsibility of a physician to get consent for a procedure that physician is going to perform. And you're right, it may make a double consent process, but it's certainly not intended to take that away.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, we will be the Medical Association obviously will be obligated and will inform our members that even with this modification, they must, get that consent. I think it's an unnecessary additional process, but I mean we can work with it. I don't think it's ideal.
Mr. Cameron,
well, just clarify, what would you say is a necessary additional process?
Well, when I was having discussions earlier before this, the point that was made to me was that, that nurse practitioners should be able to get the consent for this procedure, okay, from the patient. I understand that. I think it's more of beginning the process from the patient. Yes, I'm seriously considering that, and so then the nurse practitioner obviously would need to identify a physician who would be able to perform the procedure, which means he or she would have to get the consent. So I don't want to confuse either the patient or ultimately the surgical physician that the patient has actually given consent to the surgery when they're still obligated before the surgery to have the patient give consent for the surgical procedure. So you could have potentially two consents going on, which I think could cause some problems in the process if physicians aren't clear,
I think this procedure, the way I understand it, I'm reading this form, the double consent, if there is a confusion with double consent, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. The way I understand this form, just in a layman's reading through it, is the nurse practitioner is going to do the education of about what you're going to go through 30 days from now. This is what you're going to go through, and I'm here to tell you about that and answer any questions for you and have you sign that you've got that information. That's the way I read this. And the doctor still has to say, by the way, did you go through this procedure that I have in my hand with this person, and I want to reassure you that you have to go through, I'm going to go through these things with you just before I perform this surgery. That's the way I read this. The doctor gets the consent at the time of the surgery. It's pretty simple.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron, actually, legally, a physician is obligated to go through all of the alternatives, that there are risks associated with this, et cetera, regardless of what this form says before they do any kind of surgical procedure. That's, again, my point. But
as a doctor, I'm just thinking, as a doctor who's 120 miles away from somebody who wants to have sterilization, I don't want to make that person come into me to do this we're talking about a pre-counseling session here is what this is about, what's going to happen. Right? It has to, because we have a 30-day trigger here. It has to happen 30 days in advance, so if I allow somebody else to do that, is this still my responsibility when you arrive in my office for the procedure to make sure you've had that counseling and that I go over those things? That's what your concern is, we're doing that twice.
You are in fact doing it twice, in my opinion, and the physician will have to go through the consent process with the patient either earlier.
As a physician, I don't have to drive 120 miles to do it 30 days in advance like I am now, or have the patient drive 120 miles in a rural area of Representative Butler.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cameron, in order for the sterilization to occur, the nurse practitioner would still have to make an arrangement to know that they in fact have a surgeon available or physician available to do the procedure.
Sure.
So I'm assuming, and maybe this is a bad assumption, that the nurse practitioner in fact is going to contact the physician to in fact enable the patient to arrange with the physician the possibility of having the surgical procedure done. So you're ultimately going to have to pre-plan, since you can't get the consent 30 days out without having someone to perform the procedure. So there any?
Yeah, but I can do that on the phone.
You could, absolutely. But the physician's still going to have to talk to the patient and get their consent.
Okay.
Mr. Gallen, thank you very much. I'm done with this sterilization issue. It stays.
You got 30 days to wait.
It stays. Okay. Move on to the next session. Section, please.
Yeah, and just quickly. Section 9 is something we all agree upon. We had to remove language around hospital admissions, surgical or medical treatment for nurse practitioners to get there, but we got there. And Section 17 is the amendments that are in the dash sixes, which we've already discussed. Unless you want me to go on with anything else, I think I've described the amendments.
Did we adopt the dash sixes?
No, haven't yet.
We need to adopt the dash sixes.
Could you?
And eight.
Sure.
And the eight. Other questions or concerns?
Mr. Chair.
President Butler.
I know the nurse practitioners are aware of this. When this comes forward, and we've talked about some technical issues as well, if there are any slip of the cup between the hand and the lip here, that the nurse practitioners will bear at least equally in the burden of failure to comply with any of the patient's rights as the doctors are. In other words, if a doctor is accused of battery, then for failure to having completed exactly according to Oregon law each of the steps that are required in some of this, then we have a situation where we have nurse practitioners that are complacent in that battery. I do have one overarching concern with that, and it may not be a concern at all. I'm not a lawyer, but my recollection of Measure 11, that when one person batters another person, that is not a Measure 11. But if I have two or more people conspiring in a battery against an individual, I think I've got a Measure 11 crime. And that would be a concern that I might have with regard to the issue of battery that was brought up just a moment ago. That you may end up with folks that are with some really seriously unintended consequences. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I just want to make sure that, Martin, you go on the record with the association that you folks are prepared for all of those unintended consequences that could come out of that.
Yeah, should also represent.
I was listening for that before you respond. We will undoubtedly pass this measure out of this committee today and send it on its way, and it'll be probably a few days before it hits the House floor. In that time, they need to be responsive to Representative Butler's concerns. Otherwise, I will send it back to the committee. Does that work for you?
I will do my very best to represent Butler's concerns. Do that.
Representative Butler, does that work for you?
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Greenlake?
Do we need to do the sixes?
Yes.
Now we have sevens.
Sorry. No sevens. Eight. Six and eight.
Eight. Okay, I move the dash six amendments to Senate Bill 880A.
Thank you, Representative Greenlake. Representative Greenlake moves the dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 880. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the dash sixes are ordered adopted. Representative Greenlake.
I move the A8 amendments to Senate Bill 880A, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlake moves the A8 amendments to Senate Bill 880. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the dash A8s are ordered adopted. Representative Greenlake.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 880A as amended with the dash A6 and 8 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Greenlake moves Senate Bill 880 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Representative
Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Greenlake.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye. Butler votes no with the right to change. You're reserving the right to change vote on the floor after seeing additional information.
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 880, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Somebody like to carry this bill? Representative Greenlake is asked to carry this bill. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 880. Open work session on Senate Bill 781. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 781A had a public hearing on the 27th of May. It directs community mental health and developmental disabilities programs to provide specific services for older adults. You should have the dash A3 amendments and the dash A4 amendments. Dash A3 amendments directs the Department of Human Services and the Department of Corrections to dispense mental health prescription drugs as written for persons in custody of an institution. The A4 amendments Mr. Chair, do you want to speak to the dash A4?
Colleagues, the A4 amendments I had drafted, they are in fact the contents of House Bill 3226, which we passed out of this committee and sent to the Committee on Budget. We have since gotten clearance from the department from the powers that be that there is no fiscal impact on House Bill 3226. So to expedite things, we are incorporating House Bill 3226 into Senate Bill 781. It is in addition to the original measure. It does not replace anything. It sits in addition to the original measure. We have discussed it with Senator Morissette's staff and the Governor's Commission on Senior Services. Again, it does not have a fiscal impact. I have a statement, in fact, from the department. And, in fact, I'll just take a moment to read it on the record so that you can find it.
As you're looking, I would like to note to the committee, when Senate Bill 781 came to us, it had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We have received approval from the Speaker's office to rescind that referral to Ways and Means. So,
I'm not going to find it. All right. Well, take my word for it. James Tace has told us that there's no fiscal impact. So, we need a motion to adopt the A3s and then a motion to adopt the A4s, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I move the A3 amendments dated 6305 to House or to Senate Bill 1 as amended.
Representative Butler moves the A3 amendments to Senate Bill 781. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just like to put on the record, when my friendly local drug company comes to me and asks for an amendment, I usually reach for my wallet to make sure I have it firmly in hand. In this case, I think the A3 amendments are perfectly reasonable amendments, and I will support them.
Are there any friendly local drug companies anymore?
Well, Eli Lilly is
in
the back of the room.
Multinational corporations.
Well, they're an Indian, little Indianapolis company.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Please.
Is there a difference between the A2 and the
A3? Representative Kumar, I asked myself that same question. Maybe Sandy has an answer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the only difference between the A2s and the A3s are in the last two lines. It has a July 1 effective date that corresponds with the effective date of the dash A4s.
The A2 doesn't have...
Right.
The A2 is effective on passage. A3 is effective July 1st.
Right.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, have we received any testimony opposing either of the dash amendments?
No,
Mr. Chair, we have not.
I don't believe we have. Okay. Anybody oppose the A3 or 2 amendments? No, this is not the packet.
Okay.
The motion was to move the dash A3 amendments to Senate Bill 781. Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, is there any objection? Without objection, the A3 amendments are ordered adopted. Motion on A4, please.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 781, dated 6305.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler moves the A4 amendments to Senate Bill 781. Is there any discussion on the A4 amendments? Is there any objection to the A4 amendments? Seeing no objection, the A4 amendments are ordered adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I move the Senate Bill 781 to the floor of the House with a group ask recommendation as it has previously been amended as schedule, or as A engrossed, and with the appending of dash A3 and dash A4 amendments passed today in committee.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler moves Senate Bill 781A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Special Committee on Budget be rescinded, or the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
Boone. Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative
Kilmeade. Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Chair Dolezal.
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 781, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair will carry this measure and close the work session on Senate Bill 781A. Committee will stand at ease for about 5 minutes. Open a work session on House Bill 3260. This is the Physical Therapist Practice Act, and invite Jane Ingram forward, please. General, it's been a really, really long time, I think, since we considered this bill, so could you refresh the committee's memory on what we're trying to accomplish here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General Ingram, Oregon Physical Therapy Association, and I know we're cutting into your lunch hour, so I'll make this very, very quick. As you will recall, the Oregon Physical Therapy Association's licensed law statutes have not been updated for 30 years, therefore they are in conflict with several other statutes. This bill does several important things. It provides a definition for a physical therapist assistant, which currently does not exist. It allows the board to set continuing education requirements, which the association would like to see implemented. It allows physical therapists to accept referrals from veterinarians, and I've been told by Marcia Kelly, who's had to leave today, that they are supportive of those amendments.
Mr. Chair, is that the dash 9 amendment?
Yes. And if I may, I have to apologize to the chair. The dash 9 amendments are the chair's amendments, with the exception of an error that I made when I turned it in on page 8. The Physical Therapy Association had wished to extend the referral time to 90 days instead of having to go back to the physician every 30 days. That is not acceptable to the chair, and that is my error, and I misunderstood. So that should be on page 8, remain at 30 days. And I don't know if you can do a conceptual amendment to put that back. But
Don't worry, we will.
Okay.
I'm sorry, which line is
that? That is on page 8, line
18.
And again, my apologies to the chair for that misunderstanding.
No problem. So go ahead and continue. You said this... It finds a physical therapist assistant. This allows for continuing education. And then you were describing some further provisions.
Yes. Well, one of the biggest things that we had sought to do was the protection of the term, make sure that people weren't advertising as physical therapists and using the terminology or saying that they were physical therapists. I wasn't going to address that because that section has been removed from the Dash 9 amendments. There was also, in our original proposal, a prohibition against referring for profit. That also has been removed. So I think the first 3 points are the main things that are accomplished. Mainly we're looking for an update of the statutes because, as I said, there are conflicts. Because they are a semi-independent agency now and that is not reflected in their statute, there's all kinds of conflicts with regard to setting fees and issuing subpoenas, et cetera.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler,
are we okay with making a conceptual amendment on line 18, page 8?
Yes, Representative Butler. Did you want to do that right now?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to move the dash 9 amendments to House Bill 3260 with line 18, conceptually amended, back to the line which or the amount which has been deleted, being 30 days, back to remove it back to 30 days, striking 90 days.
Okay, thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler has moved the dash 9 amendments to House Bill 3260. Representative Butler's motion also includes that on page 8, line 18, the term, the number 90 would be stricken and that the number 30 would be restored so that the line should read, line 18, beginning of quote, subsection B, the physical therapist continues therapy and 30 days have passed. So I'll say that again. The line should read, subsection B, the physical therapist continues therapy and 30 days have passed. So that is the motion. Is there discussion on this motion?
Mr. Chair, we've had no other motions. Is that right?
That's correct.
I can throw away 2 through 6.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I also have seven here, but I won't distribute it until we're done, so that you can send it straight to the recycle bin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion on the motion so set forth? Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call, without objection, the dash 9 amendment with the conceptual amendment is ordered adopted. President Butler.
Mr. Chair, with the dash 9 amendment, conceptually amended, and appended to this House bill, I move House Bill 3260 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Representative Butler moves House Bill 3260 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
Reynolds.
Aye.
Representative Aye.
Representative
Aye. Representative
Butler.
Butler votes yes.
Chair Delta.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3260, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed.
Thank you, Chair.
President Tomei, would you care to carry this bill?
I would be delighted to.
Thank you very much. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill, close the work session on House Bill 3260. Thank you. Colleagues, I'm still waiting on Senate Bill 782 for an amendment from the Legislative Council to fix it and send it on its way. That's the last order of business that we are awaiting. I do not have that amendment.
913 is going away, Senator.
913 is on its way to the House floor. We chose to do nothing with that. We chose not to reconsider it. It doesn't need reconsideration. It's going straight to the floor. So 782 is very, very, very important. So I don't have a sense of when we will get that amendment back, but we will try to find at least four people or five people to come back a little later today and move the amendment that we want to move.
You're going to keep the committee open then?
Yeah, so we'll stand in recess.
You've got... I have elections at 1, and I have land use at 1:30, so you can probably find me down in hearing 50.
How does the 3 o'clock hour work?
Billy, I have a meeting in my district at 3 o'clock, so I will be gone. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Otherwise, can I conceptually vote yes on it?
I wish you could.
Free vote?
Sure,
you can suspend the rules.
No, I can't. Representative Tomei?
Yes, I'll
okay.
be in water.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I'll just stick
so
around.
You can track us down.
So I have Green Lake.
Anderson will be with me in hearing of 50.
Anderson and 50.
Me and 50.
And then Representative Cameron.
Probably the third hole.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
But we could easily be out by.
Yeah, we have enough. Okay.
Just
with that,
sitting
the
here.
Committee will stand in recess. Should we do test it? We'll just stand in recess, right?
Leave the bill file here.
Can we just stand in recess?
You're thinking.
Call the House Committee on Health and Human Services back to order.
This is more testimony.
Pat, I'll just be 1 minute. We'll call the Health Committee back to order and open a work session on Senate Bill 782. Representative Boone.
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry, I have a script. Sorry.
Right.
The Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that reconsideration of Senate Bill 782 be taken up immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 782B do pass as amended be reconsidered. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 782A3 be amended, amendment be adopted, be reconsidered. Is there objection? We have to back out of all that.
No objection.
No objection, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that the motion on Senate Bill 782A2 amendment be adopted, be reconsidered. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Boone.
Mr. Chair.
Well, definitely you're saying to hear. You've never been able to have that one.
I would move the A5 amendment to Senate Bill 782.
Thank you, Representative Boone. Representative Boone moves the A5 amendments to Senate Bill 782. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the A5 amendments are ordered adopted. Representative Boone.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 782-A,
as amended,
as amended, be passed with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Boone. Representative Boone moves Senate Bill 782 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Anderson.
Excused.
Representative
Boone. Aye.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Greenwood.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Excused.
Chair
Dalton. Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 782, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. We'll ask Representative Boone to carry this measure.
All right.
Woo-hoo. With that, we will close the work session. Actually, we'll have two carriers, Representative Boone and Representative Greenwood.
Happy to.
With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 782, and we stand adjourned for the session.
I just staff just wants to thank the committee.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I think we might have a committee party.
We are going to have.
That's on the record, so we'll still see each other.
We'll have a nice committee party with all the health committees. All get together. We'll have a grand fiesta. And that'll be in the next couple of weeks.
I thought you said fiasco.
No.
We've done that already.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everybody, very much. Appreciate all of you. With that, we stand adjourned.
Great job.